Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this edition of Garden Talk. Great to have with me today Melinda Myers. Melinda, Milwaukee-based gardening expert. She is the author of more than 20 books, host of Melinda's Garden Moments, and we always love it when she joins us. I'm Larry Mueller, by the way, in case you didn't know that. And Melinda, hi.
Hi. Always great to join you as well, Larry.
Oh, it's wonderful to hear your voice, actually. How's your garden looking?
You know, I have to brag a little bit. You know, I always plead bad straw bale gardener. Well, I gave it a third attempt. I followed the directions, and it is doing great. So I just felt I had to redeem myself to all your listeners. I was actually going to send you pictures and go, Larry, I can talk now, honestly, about being successful. And I'm very excited because we, at the Green Bay Garden Fair this spring, I ran into a friend, Jim Beard, from Fox Valley Tech, and they have this cool cage that students built for straw bale gardens. So it's a way to kind of dress it up a little bit. So they gave me one to display at State Fair. So I have a mini on wheels straw bale garden.
Oh, you're kidding.
I know. So I'm very excited to share that because it's, and he's happy to share the plans, and I have his website, will be on a sign, but I'm very excited because it really does work. As you know, you've been doing it for years, and I always said, well, you know, I'm not good at following the, so I got out, I printed out the directions, and every day, you know, we did the fertilizing, watering, and my, you know, a friend came over and said, wow, your straw bale gardens are really looking good. I said, yes, I know. Maybe I had to give up that in-ground stuff.
Well, I tell you what, it's my garden looks, my straw bale garden looks wonderful. I made one mistake. I ordered, when I purchase plants, I always purchase a variety of tomato plants, some that I've never tried. You know, you're experimenting, and then some new ones.
Right.
And then I'll experiment with this cherry tomato variety. I did not pay any attention to the size of the, you know, I looked, these cherry tomatoes are looking really small. They're like a half inch across, and that's not very big, believe me. And then I looked at the information on that particular variety, and that's exactly the size that they get to be. And I thought, why didn't you read?
Because we're gardeners. We don't find out until we go, it's going to take forever to get a handful of those small cherry tomatoes.
So, yeah, so there goes my cherry tomatoes are not doing so well. But everything else in the straw bale garden is going really great. And, you know, I don't know, is it, do the straw bales, I think now here we are in a very hot, getting into the very hot period of the summer. I mean, it's going to be 86 degrees where I live today, and so that's warm. But the straw bales don't seem to, I mean, I guess the plants seem to be doing fine in spite of the heat.
You know, and I think that insulation that the straw, so it's a container in a way, but it's got built-in insulation, too, with the straw layer, I think, around what's composted in the middle. And as long as you can water, so I put a drip irrigation on my straw bales because I knew that was an issue for me with, you know, we all are busy. And so, you know, I can turn it on, I can set it on a timer. The small one I water by hand, but I have lots of containers. So, and I kept it right with my other container, so it was convenient to the water. If it's easy, we're likely to do that. And that's what I tell everybody, but I actually listen to my own advice this year.
Well, I'm eager to see you at State Fair.
Yes, I'll be there every day. And I speak at 10 and 2, and so that's one of the topics. We did a quilt garden, and I know that's nothing new, but we have a fun headboard that Dawn, a member of my team, painted up, and we've got some mint and oregano in pots because we've both had to weed it out of our gardens, including the State Fair garden, and decided in a pot is the only way to go. And then always have edibles, and we're growing artichokes in the garden this year.
Good.
And climbing spinach. I don't know if you've tried Malabar or climbing spinach.
No, I haven't.
It's not a true spinach, but it's heat tolerant. It's got a nice buttery, nutty flavor. It's a vine, and it has beautiful red flowers and red stems to the leaves. And I've grown it in pots. We have it on a trellis behind our sweet potatoes. And what's so cool is that when I'm gardening, I'll just pick a leaf or two and munch on it. And it's, you know, it's a great way. It's got a very rich flavor, and it takes the heat where your spinach is usually phased out by now.
Yeah.
And last year I had it kind of, it was kind of in a, hidden by the sunflower. So we put it front and center so we could share it this year with everybody.
Well, that is very, very cool. And I'm glad to. So every day at State Fair from when? At 10 and then again at 2, did you say?
At 10 and 2. And usually I end up after, they usually kick me off the stage, but then I'm in the garden answering questions until I can't talk or people, you know, decide they've had enough of me. We've got goodie bags and lots of giveaways. It's just, it's, you know, the fair. It's always fun. You know, people are in a good mood. The gardens are beautiful. We just have some new things to share, and it's, you know, it's a great way I can spread out my fair food that way too, you know. Baked potato one day, cream puff another.
Well, I'll be there on the 11th, so
excellent.
I will come over and say hello. I'll be, it's Extension Day, UW Extension Day, so I'll be on the stage at the UW Extension stage anyway, talking with a whole bunch of people between 2:30 and 4:30 that day,
oh,
so that'll
excellent.
Be fun. So and I'll come
also,
see you.
Oh, that would be good. And if not, I'll come and wave at you while you're busy working hard.
Okay. Well, we have lots of callers. Let's go to Barbara and Nina first here. Barbara, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I took your advice and I bought the book and I put down 21 bales of hay. And I've grown, everything is doing great, the tomatoes, the peas, the beans, carrots, beets, lettuce, everything's doing great except my peppers. The leaves are turning yellow and falling off from the bottom. The top is bright green and I have no flowers.
Oh.
Everybody's being treated the same way with the same soaker hose. I have five different plants, they're all doing the same thing.
You know, and I know when you stick your hand in there, it's kind of an interesting experience.
Yeah, it is.
But, you know, one of the things, because you obviously are thinking too moisture, nutrients, that type of thing, I would check to see if, you know, after you've watered, maybe the end of the day, if you water in the morning, just kind of see if that moisture level feels any differently around the pepper than the tomato or any of the others. Just, you know, decomposition can happen differently. Maybe the straw bale was packed a little tighter in one area than another. What kind of fertilizing are you doing now that they're in and growing? Have
just
you done
the,
any?
Water-soluble Miracle-Gro.
And how often are you doing that?
I've done that twice since I planted.
Okay. And are these sweet peppers or hot peppers?
I have got, no, there's no hot peppers. They're all sweet, but they're all different colors.
Okay. One of the things, too, with peppers and tomatoes are sensitive to extreme heat and extreme cold, but I find sweet peppers even more so than tomatoes and hot peppers. Now, you're getting no blooms. That may be some of these crazy spikes in temperatures we're having. The yellow, to me, sounds moisture issues. You may, you know, if you can sacrifice one, want to dig it up and see what's going on with the roots and see if you have any root rot issues and why your peppers and none of the others. You know, is it a weak plant to start with? Was, you know, just like people, some of us get cold, some don't. But I would say if you're willing to sacrifice one.
Yeah,
you know,
that's a good idea.
And then take a look at what's happening underground. I always told people when I was an extension agent, my patients can't speak and they're already half buried. So, you know, I would check that and see if there's something going on root rot-wise. If you've checked moisture, it sounds like you're fertilizing everything okay. You know, you might want to cut back a little on the Miracle-Gro and just see, you know, every 3 weeks instead of every two and see if you have good luck that way.
I was just thinking about my own peppers. My hot peppers are doing great, and actually I've got only have one sweet pepper, and it's a purple variety.
Oh, nice.
And it's doing quite well.
So you might, it might be something with that particular plant, maybe weak when it started or some reason. So I'd if you can sacrifice one, you know, maybe give up one for the good of the rest and see what's going on.
Good luck. Thanks, Barb, for calling. Appreciate it. Pam in Kellogg, Minnesota, up next. Hi, Pam.
Good morning. I have grown tomatillos for the first time.
Oh.
I like something new every year, and they are such a pleasure to see. Now, as I understand it, they get just a little larger than a golf ball, and this paper tissue thing around the outside, I don't feel like they're big enough inside yet. But I'm going to need a salsa verde recipe, if you might have one.
Go ahead.
Cookbooks, and I don't see anything, and I'm going to have some.
You are, and all my friends who know me well are laughing hysterically. Someone's asking me for a recipe. I have a great ratatouille recipe that doesn't help you with your tomatillas.
Oh.
And I've also started doing a lot more fun things now that I have a bigger garden. You might want to, you know what I've been doing for my recipes is just searching the internet. Have you tried searching the internet for, and you know, there's recipes.com, and I'm not affiliated. I just kind of start typing in salsa verde recipe, and then I'll start looking for those. Because I'm like you, I like to try new vegetables, but I don't always have a good recipe for using them. And I find, so I'll read through them, and if I've had, like, I did this great beet salad, and I went through about five recipes, and I thought, oh, that sounds like the ingredients of the one I ate at this restaurant that I like so well. So I would go on the internet and try. I don't know if you have one, Larry, a salsa verde recipe you really like.
Actually, I do the same thing you do.
Okay.
for something like that, I would just go to, there are, so Epicurious is one of
thank you.
Epicurious is probably the one that I go to the most.
They have a lot of unusual things on there, too. They deal with a lot of unusual ingredients.
So, yeah. So go to Epicurious online, and you're going to definitely find some recipes.
And one of the things I want to warn you about tomatillos, I've grown them before, and they're perfect for salsa verde, but they reseed like crazy because they're such big producers. So you may have tomatillos for several years, and that could be good or not so good.
Not so good. Okay. Pam, thanks a lot for calling.
And good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck. Appreciate the call. You can join in, too. We're going to go to Pat next in Hilbert, but there's a line open for you at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. Now let's turn to Pat and Hilbert. Hi, Pat.
Hi. My husband and I make great compost out of leaves and grass clippings, mostly maple leaves. And when I use it in the garden, which is a flower and shrub garden, it just seems to disappear. I mean, it's so light. I suppose water washes away, maybe wind. And I'm wondering, is the only thing I can do is to bury it under chip mulch? What do you suggest I do with this? I always incorporate it when I plant something, and, you know, I generally enrich the soil with it, but I'd like to put it on top of the soil.
But it just doesn't last very long. Well, it decomposes very, very quickly. I mean, it's mostly grass.
Mostly
water.
Right. And so one of the things, and you bring up a really good point, I love using leaf mulch, but I don't like it really composted for exactly the same reason you say, because that really highly decomposed leaf mulch that's compost, it disappears. So it doesn't work as well for a compost or for a mulch layer as it does for improving the soil. Larry's right. It's gone quickly. One thing you may want to do is if you want to top dress your garden in the spring, especially perennial gardens, and then do some vertical mulching, which is take one of those augers for your cordless drill. You know, you'll see them by the bulbs in fall. You know, you could hook it up to your cordless drill to plant bulbs. So you could spread that layer and then do some vertical mulching and then use that compost to amend existing perennial gardens. Because, you know, a lot of times we have a garden that it's not bad enough to start over, but it really needs a boost and we don't really want to tear it apart. And, you know, spreading that compost on the surface and then using that auger to drill it down into the soil in scattered locations will help you amend that bed a little differently. You could mix your leaf and, you know, you could put it underneath your wood chips. I've seen some research where people feel that if you put that compost down especially around trees and shrubs, and then put your wood chips, you're feeding the soil. And wood chips, as you know, temporarily tie up nitrogen in the soil.
Right.
Not usually a problem around trees and shrubs, but you're kind of counteracting it by putting that great, rich compost, low in nitrogen, underneath your wood chips. So that might be a place to use it on your trees and shrubs where you're willing to put some wood chips, but put this first, then the wood chips, and you're kind of feeding the soil short-term, while the wood chips in the long run will help feed the soil but keep the weeds down.
There we go. Thanks, Pat, for calling. Appreciate it. Melinda Myers, our guest today, Milwaukee-based gardening expert, the author of more than 20 books, including Minnesota and Wisconsin Month-by-Month Gardening. She's the host of Melinda's Garden Moments. And she's going to be at the State Fair virtually every day. Oh, that's going to be fun. I'm Larry Mueller. For Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next week on Garden Talk, we're talking with the Vicars of Vegetables. Oh my gosh, we haven't talked to Irwin Goldman and Jim Nienhuis for quite a while. They're going to be talking about heirloom varieties and other vegetables, of course. Plus, we'll hear about the Student Organic Seed Symposium. And I'm going to be involved in that as well. So that'll be a lot of fun. That's next week on Garden Talk. Right now, though, visiting with Melinda Myers. Great to have her along. Thank you for listening in. Join in, 1-800-642-1234. Maybe you have some questions about your garden and maybe surviving a little bit of the summer heat or other questions. Again, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Norman, Wisconsin Dells up next. Hi, Norm. Thanks for calling.
Hello. How are you?
Great. Appreciate the call.
I have a watermelon question.
Okay.
I, too, am straw bale gardening this year for the first time this year, and we've sort of done controls and planting the same kind of tomatoes in the bales and in conventional gardening as a test, but I had a bale left over, and so I thought, boy, it would be fun to grow a watermelon. So I put it in the straw bale, and they grew great. The plant seemed impervious to anything, and lo and behold, one day there was a golf ball-sized watermelon, which quickly became baseball-sized and grapefruit-sized, and it got up to about 5 inches and quit. The Blacktail Mountain are supposed to be 9 to 12 inches, and they all get to about 5 inches, and they just stop. And I finally cut one open. The tendril next to it was brown. The bottom of it was golden. It started getting dusky on the outside. And I cut it open, and it was pure white. So it's not ripe. What should I be doing?
Huh.
Wow. And you said it was not ripe. Okay. You know, watermelons are challenging. We've had some good heat lately, so I'm surprised that, you know, we're not getting it fully ripe. I have been able, last year I grew watermelons, got them in late, in the ground, not in a straw bale, and actually picked them, and they did add a little bit of flavor over time. But you're right, the tendrils are dry, they're brown. Is the stem still green right along the fruit?
Yes, the stem is still green, and it's still making new little watermelons. But they just get to be about a certain size. I've got them on the train on the trellis above the straw bale, and I've taken some of the branches and keep picking the blossoms off and let the ones that have melons out of go. But they grow like crazy. They get about 5 inches and they just stop growing.
You know, and do we blame it on the weather? But you've got them supported, right, on the trellis or the fruit around the ground.
Little nylon stocking hammocks all over the place.
Okay. I like that hammock. Sounds good.
Yeah.
You know what I would do? I would check them, you know, if you're willing, if you have enough, I would give them a few more days and check and see if they're doing any ripening, even though all the signs right now say they're ripe and the insides aren't. Most of that is usually moisture and weather related when we have fruit that don't ripen properly, either too much not enough moisture, too much not enough heat at different times during the growing season that can interfere with development. And, you know, for a while we had a lot of heat and then cool. You know, it would get really hot during the day and then the next day would be down in the 50s and heat. I would see, how many would you say are full size but the inside's not ripe?
Well, I don't think any are full size because it says it'll get to be 9 to 12 inches.
Okay.
They get to, like I say, they get to 5 inches and they just quit. They look wonderful. I mean, they look great. They look healthy. The plants are terrific.
I would just leave them.
I'd leave them, yeah.
And check them every, you know. I've read where, I've never done this because I think it's crazy, where people will take a plug out of the watermelon to see if it's ripe and then stick it back in if it isn't and leave it out there. I don't know. I've never done that. But I would leave them on. You have nothing to lose at this point. And if you leave them on for another week and try one, that's why I was asking how many you have. So maybe leave them on for another 5 days, check one out, see what it's doing, and if it seems to be getting riper or not. And then I think letting those other ones mature now that we're consistently warm for the rest of the season and see if that changes. Because I do think it's probably a response to the weather. You know, plant size and fruit size, we know, varies from year to year. The tags tell us one thing, but sometimes the plants don't do the same thing in my backyard as your backyard or somebody in another part of the state. So I would check them. I'd leave them on. I'd give them some more time and periodically harvest, you know, especially if the stems start drying out.
Absolutely. Give
them
a shot.
They're done.
Thanks a lot for calling, Norm. Appreciate it very much. I want to give others a chance to join in. You can join us, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Peggy up next from Keeler. Hi, Peggy.
Hi. I have a question about the Malabar spinach.
Yes.
I've done it a few times, and I've collected the seeds, but I can never get them to germinate. Is there a trick?
I have never collected from seeds from the plants. It is hard to find seeds, so I totally get why you're doing that. I have started them right from seeds I've purchased in the garden with no problem. I don't know if the seeds you're collecting, I know they're heirloom plants, so they should be able to come true. Warm soil, more and more soil, I'm sure you're doing it just like you do tomatoes and peppers.
Right.
I would try collecting them and starting them right in the garden next spring and see if you have better luck that way.
Well, I have a mini greenhouse,
mm-hmm.
6 foot by 8 foot. But,
okay.
I try them in the house. I try them there. I soak the seeds overnight. I've tried different ways, and I've even tried to stratify them, and I get nothing.
Yeah, and what I would suggest is trying them right in the garden next year and see if you have some luck doing them right in the garden, which doesn't seem reasonable, right? A greenhouse should be a better option. But I don't know of any special treatment that they need. Have you tried purchasing them? So you obviously did if you had them once.
I purchased the plant, and they're
okay.
Very hard to find in
they
the
are.
Area where I live. So I have saved the seeds, and then every other year I'll find the plant and I'll buy it. But it's, you know, I'd like to plant it every year. It is a beautiful plant.
You know, try Seed Savers. That was where I first saw the plant. And, I don't know with the hybrid, if you're collecting seeds, because a lot of them are the rubra, if you're collecting from that maybe that's why you're not having success, that they're not able, you know, with a lot of hybrids, you get hybridization. Sometimes you don't get the same kind of results. But I would check Seed Savers Exchange. I haven't looked for them in their catalog, but they do have a catalog, and you might be able to purchase seeds there to get a pull of them. You're right. I picked some up at Ebert's in Exonia this year. I was so excited. I bought them for State Fair. I bought them for my gardener. I bought them for friends because they're so hard to find. So try Seed Savers Exchange and purchase some seeds from there. And the one thing about Seed Savers is there will be directions on saving the seed because they are trying to keep that genetic material out there. So
yeah.
I would give them a call. So that way you know you're not getting a hybrid that may not, one, come true from seed or may not be able to produce viable seed either. That may be the issue as well.
Yeah, very good points. Thanks a lot, Peggy, for calling. Appreciate it. Rachel in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about our pumpkin patch. We made a raised bed this year and put two different varieties of pumpkins in the raised bed. And the orange variety is doing just fine. And then the white variety that I planted, the pumpkins will get about 3 inches in diameter, and then they will start to, I guess, rot or fall off. And I'm wondering what is causing that and if there's anything I can do to fix it.
Yeah, squashes and pumpkins, melons often have a problem called blossom end rot. Okay, you probably know that on tomatoes, which is a physiological disorder due to a lack of calcium, but it's really for Wisconsin. We have plenty of calcium. It's a moisture imbalance. For squashes and pumpkins, it can be moisture, but it can also be a fungal disease. So I know this sounds putsy, but as you see those little pumpkins forming, so you know the female flower has the mini pumpkin underneath the bloom, and when you see that flower wilt and start to fade, if you go out and pluck that off, often that prevents a disease entryway, and sometimes that can prevent the rotting of the fruit. So, one, make sure your moisture is consistent. You know, we had a lot of rain. I'm guessing if your orange ones are at the same level of maturity and doing fine, it's not a moisture problem, but you might want to check that. But then also, if you can go out and pluck off those flowers as they're fading, because once they've faded, you know the fruit's been pollinated, fertilized, and it will continue to grow. And often that's enough to stop that disease problem that you're seeing.
There we go. Thanks, Rachel.
Okay.
Yeah, appreciate the call.
Good luck with that.
Jeff from Dorchester, Iowa, called and said that we were talking about watermelons earlier and problems with ripening. He said he thinks it's watering. He waters his plants his watermelon every other day. And they are always great. I mean, he does that apparently every year.
Well, and I'm wondering if it's straw bale, he's probably watering every day because you really about have to water every day. But he brings up a good point. Here's the deal with fruit formation. If we have a lot of rain in the beginning of the season, when your fruit's forming, you get lots of cells. This sounds a little too science-based, but I'll make it friendly in gardening. So, like, let's say we have a lot of rain, that watermelon's going to form lots of cells. And then at the end of the season, if we don't get a lot, those cells never fill out, so your fruit doesn't get as large. If it's the opposite, we don't have a lot of cells forming because it's dry, and then at the end of the season, it's wet, then those cells often explode. Why we get cracking sometimes on tomatoes.
Yeah.
And, you know, so moisture can be an issue, but I'm guessing he was watering every day, but I really appreciate the input because more gardeners thinking about it, better answer.
That's exactly right. We had an email from, or frankly, a Facebook question from Bill, who said, I have an extensive perennial garden that is doing beautifully. At what point in the calendar should I stop feeding them in preparation for winter?
Oh, excellent question and perfect timing. You know, I always use August 1st to stop fertilizing perennials, trees, and shrubs. And really, trees and shrubs need very little fertilization. You know, if your plants need a nutrient boost or you want to kind of give them a little nudge to grow a little faster. And so by August 1st, really stop fertilizing any of your perennials, trees, and shrubs because you're right, Bill. You want them to harden off. You want them to get ready for winter. If we fertilize beyond that, you're going to encourage late-season growth that's less likely to make it through our harsh winter. So thanks for asking. Perfect timing.
And from Mike on Facebook, he wonders about his cucumber plants. A cucumber plant will wilt in 2 days with no previous sign of disease or stress. So it's going great, and then suddenly, boom, it wilts.
Bacterial wilt is a terrible disease of cucumbers, and it does exactly as you're describing it. The insects that carry the disease are the cucumber beetles, those striped and spotted cucumber beetles. And once that plant wilts, it usually turns yellow and dies, and it seems like it's overnight, and there's nothing you can do. Controlling the cucumber beetles is an option. Unfortunately, you usually find them in the flowers, so we don't want to spray because of the bees. And we can't cover them to keep the beetles off because we need the bees to get to the flowers. So some people will do hand picking. I know we've had some people that use the dust, you know, a little hand vacuum to suck up potato beetles and cucumber beetles carefully, knocking them into a can of soapy water. If you choose to use an insecticide, always try to time it when the bees aren't active and something that tends to be less toxic. So it sounds like bacterial wilt. Try to rotate your crop if possible. You know, put it in a different part of the garden and get that dead plant out of there, because the insects carry the disease from one, from a sick plant to your healthy plant. So Extension has a great publication on bacterial wilt. So if you go to the UW Extension Learning Store,
that's right.
You'll be a wealth of information, and there's a great publication with a photo so you can compare and make sure that is the problem.
Samantha in Madison has a question, so let's go to her now. Samantha, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. Thanks so much. I've got two questions for you.
Okay.
The first one, I've read that you can take used coffee grounds and put them around plants to provide some nutrients. And when I tried that with my peppers this year, they turned yellow, and I thought I was killing them. Might I be frying them?
You know, there is, and I have not been able to locate this research again. I think it was Cornell or somebody found that coffee, usually not a problem in moderation. It is. It does have some allelopathic, one plant toxin that can interfere with the growth of another, with like lettuce and I think tomatoes if you do too much. I like to put coffee grounds in my worm bin or my compost bin or just a light layer. It may or may not have been the coffee grounds. It might have been coincidental. Maybe there was a disease issue that was hitting your peppers anyway, or maybe it held the moisture too much. It doesn't make your soil too acidic. Some of us with alkaline soil wished it would change the pH, but it's usually not harmful in moderation. The levels were pretty high that you had to use. I can't remember those right now. But if you throw them in your compost bin, that might be a better way to use them, or spread them in a very thin layer around your plants, as opposed to, I don't know if you piled them thick or often. So you might want to spread them out a bit. And I think you shouldn't really have a problem. So it may have been coincidental. So you might want to just thin that layer out a bit, watch those peppers. And then if you have a lot of them, throw them in your compost pile. You'll be amazed, or dig them in the garden in the fall. If you have an area you turn over, and they'll be broken down and add nutrients and organic matter to the soil before planting in the spring.
Okay, and then my next question, I've had really bad luck with garlic. A lot of times they'll just kind of shrivel up and die. And so this year I went and I, as soon as all of a sudden they were missing, I would dig them up and they were teeny tiny little bulbs. Is there anything that I'm doing wrong with garlic that they're not maturing to a full size?
When are you planting them, in the spring or in the fall?
Fall, in the fall.
Okay. And so they come out of winter looking pretty good?
Yeah, they look beautiful.
Okay. I laugh because I always tell people garlic can be challenging in the north. And I had a listener, one of your regular listeners, Larry, go, "It's easy to grow garlic." I went, "Well, I hate to make people who are having trouble think that they're bad gardeners." You know, the root crops, garlic being one, we're eating that underground portion. Good drainage, moist but well-drained soils. We typically have a lot of phosphorus in our soil, but it's not always available to the plant. Do you have good luck with your onions when you grow onions?
Yeah, my onions are beautiful.
Okay, well then your garlic should be okay. You know, usually by this time they're starting to be ready to harvest in August, during the month of August. But small-sized garlic, are you buying them locally at a local garden center?
I am, yes.
Okay, well, that's good, because there are garlics that do better in the north than the south. Do you mulch them in the summer?
No, I did not.
You might want to try that just to keep the roots a little cool and moist and keep them growing as long as possible. What kind of fertilization are you doing?
Just compost.
Okay. And your onions and everything else are doing fine with your compost fertilization? Everything's producing just fine?
Yes.
Okay. Then it's probably not a soil nutrient issue. Maybe try throwing a little, you know, shredded leaves, evergreen needles, something to keep that soil cool and moist, and see if that just gives it that little nudge to keep it going.
Okay. And can you, I had one garlic that came up, and it looks like it's got three bulbs on the top. Can I plant those?
Yeah, you can plant those sets as well.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so at least you'll have more. Even if you don't have a lot underground to use in your dishes, you can at least start planting some more also for this fall. So good luck and try a little mulch, and hopefully that'll help get things growing a little bigger.
Thanks a lot for calling, Samantha. Carrie in Whitewater, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thanks. I have tomato plants. I plant tomatoes every year, and this year the plants are beautiful. They're gorgeous, big, big green, beautiful leaves, and not much fruit. Not much fruit at all, and it's very small. And I really haven't had this problem at this time of the year. Sort of wondering what might be going on.
And when did you? When were you able to get them in the ground to plant?
Around Memorial Day.
Okay, and I'm taking it full sun. Okay, sometimes we start with a garden in full sun and a tree gets bigger or the neighbor puts a shed up or, you know, we interfere.
Yeah.
So I always like to make sure the light hasn't changed. I was talking to a friend the other day and I said, well, how are your tomatoes? And she goes, oh, not great. And I said, what's the matter? She goes, well, they're not ripe yet. And I went, oh, well, I planted late, so I'm okay that mine aren't ripe yet. So I guess I'm not as disappointed as some. But you have no fruit at all?
No, I do have fruit, but it's just really small and not very much of it.
Okay. Well, think again about early this season. You know, we had a lot of rain and we had cooler temperatures. And we had some of those hot days and cool days. And so actually some of us that planted later actually benefited because the soil was much warmer and the air was warmer and our plants took off. The hard part about tomatoes is waiting for their first red ripe one. So it's nothing you're doing wrong.
Okay.
It sounds like you've got fruit forming, so that's good. So you've had pollination. It sounds like the plants are good and healthy. And your fertilization again, what are you doing for fertilizer?
I just do compost. I do lasagna gardening.
Oh, okay. Okay. You know, And compost is a great thing. Sometimes we may need to give it a little bit more of a nutrient boost when those tomatoes are about the size of a golf ball. If you're going to do any, whether it's compost tea or add some organic fertilizer or synthetic fertilizer, about the time they're about the size of a golf ball is a safe time to fertilize and you won't interfere with flowering. So if you think they may need just a little nudge, but if your leaves are green, the plants are healthy, I think it's just unfortunately a matter of waiting.
Okay, I'm just being impatient, I guess.
Yeah, well,
all of us are.
Yeah, you know, I always put in one plant, one early girl plant.
You know, and that's a good idea, Larry. Not only planting one of the early varieties, but also staking. If you stake your tomatoes, which I'm not good at because you have to keep tying them up, but if you pick one early girl and you stake it, you'll have fewer fruit but earlier fruit.
Yeah,
and so that's a way to beat the, you know, that waiting period.
I've already had some very nice bacon, lettuce, tomato sandwiches.
He's rubbing it in. He's rubbing it in
right
now. I went to the farmer's market, I'll confess, and bought tomatoes. I'm like, that way they'll all ripen, you know, in 3 days. So I'll have 100 at that point. But, okay, Larry, I'm feeling bad.
Well, I have, all the rest of the plants are green. You know, I have lots of tomatoes, but they're all, you know, they're not ripe, but that early girl plant has really
good suggestion. So even if you don't stake it, at least get some of those early varieties in. Good suggestion.
Thanks, Gary, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller with Melinda Myers, our Milwaukee-based gardening expert, on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here for this edition of Garden Talk. My guest is Melinda Myers, Milwaukee-based gardening expert. She is host of Melinda's Garden Moments. She's got 20 books and a wonderful site that you can go to as well. And Melinda, tell us a little bit about your website.
Well, one of the things, I think it's my basis and extension, just like you, Larry, is our job is to take resources and share them with other people, whether it's something we've learned along the way by doing or from others. And so that's what I try to do on my website. I have audio and video tips. So Melinda's Garden Moments are available after they air on TV or radio. We house them on my website. We have frequently asked questions. If you post a question, be patient with me. You outnumber me out there. But we try to at least have as much information as possible there so that you can help find the answer. And I have a section on learning from Melinda where some of my handouts from my talks, I have kids' activities, because I think growing gardeners is one of the nice things. Someone yep. inspired you and me to garden, and I think it's a fun and obligation, maybe is a too strong of a word, but a great opportunity to share our passion with others. So I like to have kids' gardening activities, and I love to hear from gardeners because you guys give me great ideas to pass along to others, or your questions inspire me to keep going and learning more because, boy, there's so much to know out there. And just, you know, it's a way that I can pass along the little bit that I know and have learned from others. So, and if there's things you're looking for and not finding, please let me know because we'd love to try to help you. And I wanted to mention, I just found out about this new garden app. It's garden socially called Grow It, where you can type in and get information about plants, but it also does it regionally. So let's say, you know, you're in northern Wisconsin and you want to know about a plant and how it does, it'll help you find other gardeners in the area and get some feedback from them. Oh, I grew it. It worked well. Or no, I didn't. And it's got great images and, you know, to help you pick plants. I like something that's orange for the shade and easy to grow. And so it can help you select some plants too. And it's called Grow It. And it's a free app. So
oh.
it's really fun. And it's available both for Mac for, you know, on iTunes yep. and also in Google Play. So you can use it whether you have an iPhone or an iPad, an Android, or other devices called Grow It. So pretty exciting. I've heard about it before, and I just saw it and talked to people using it. And it just is a very easy, easy to use, and some cool information that I think gardeners, whether you're a beginner or advanced person, would be interested in.
Wonderful information. And your site again is?
MelindaMyers.com.
And we have a link on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show as well, of course. And Gil in De Pere has a question about an issue Gil is having. Hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. But, you know, I was reading an article in the paper the other day about chronic wasting disease, and they don't know if there is anything that people can get. Now, I have a garden. I have a the garden out in the country, and deer come in the garden. They eat the beet tops. They eat the Swiss chard. They eat the bean tops. They're kind of letting it alone now. But I don't think we have that disease in northeastern Wisconsin yet that I know of. But is there any potential that this could be a hazard to people if deer are eating in gardens?
You know, you bring up a good point, and I don't have the exact answer for chronic wasting. But I did want to mention a lot of us gardeners are bad at wearing gloves, and I'm trying to get better because not only do we raccoons carry some diseases and cats, stray feral cats, that when they're using our gardens for their litter box or their bathroom, that we can pick those diseases up. So it's a good idea to wear gloves when you're working in the garden, and a good idea to wash off your produce. And I don't even want to venture into chronic wasting. Do we defer that to Scott Craven?
Yeah.
But I think you bring up a good point, and that does say, you know, I eat out of my garden, but I have a good deer fence that keeps the raccoons. But washing off your produce is probably a good idea. Wearing gloves is a good idea. I don't know about that issue with chronic wasting, but you bring up a good point about being careful about the others that share that garden space.
There we go. And, yeah, well, maybe Scott can talk about that at some point. I mean, I don't think there's any research on that.
I don't either.
I can't remember ever seeing a thing about it. But you're right. If you know, it's important. Be prudent, you know. Wash your even though it's, you know, even though you may have an organic garden and you see that garden every day, you never know. Maybe there was a raccoon out there or something else that, you know.
Right. And so it's just, I think it's being careful. My daughter, it's always good when your kids' friends give you advice as an adult, right? And she was a pre-med student, and she goes, do you wear gloves when you garden? And I said, and she goes, you need to wear gloves. Do you know what's in that soil? Not to make anybody afraid, but you know what? It saves your hands. It's easier to clean your nails when you're done.
Yep.
You don't get the blisters. And And, you know, if you're concerned about those things, which I think is, you know, as you mentioned, being prudent, it's a good idea. We should all be wearing gloves, and there's so many better choices out there now. So thank you for the call, and if I find anything, I'll share it with Larry, but I'm sure Scott Craven would know if there is any research out there.
Yeah. Thanks again for calling. Nathan in Burlington, your turn now. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi there. I have a small yard, so I've taken to container gardening for most of my vegetables. I've got a zucchini in a pot, a big pot. It's been doing really well. I've got some huge fruit off of it. But I'm starting to notice yellowing on the ends and a little rotting on the ends of the fruit. Is there anything that I can do about that to keep the plant producing?
Yeah, one of the things is with zucchini, the goal is to pick them if they're the bar type, like what we typically call zucchini, when they're 6 to 8 inches long, even when they're about an inch, inch and a half in diameter at the most, really an inch.
Right.
If you harvest regularly, they'll keep producing. Now, the yellow end is on the fruit, correct?
Correct, yep.
Okay, on the blossom end. And it sounds like it might be the same thing that was happening with the woman that talked about the white pumpkins. And so if you go... And the nice part about being a container gardener, and I was for many, many years, and I still use containers even though I have a big yard now, is it's easier to go out and manage sometimes. So as those flowers are fading, but the fruit's starting to develop, take those off, and that should help reduce
take
the problem.
Off. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Sounds good. Thank you. And how about powdery mildew?
Oh, boy.
I just trash it.
Powdery mildew on vine crops, you know, somebody talked about growing their cucumbers up or their watermelon on a trellis, and if you can go vertical, even in a container, that's a great way to help increase airflow, light penetration. Cornell University found that a baking soda and insecticidal soap or horticulture oil that acts as a spreader sticker in water. So a tablespoon of baking soda. There's a lot of different recipes. I've seen anywhere from a teaspoon to a tablespoon of either insecticidal soap or horticulture oil in a gallon of water. But you have to spray regularly. So
every 7 days?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So, and then there's some organic products on the market as well if you don't want to mix your own. But, yeah, read and follow label directions. But mildew, especially with all the moisture we've had and with hot weather and it's wet and humid and low humidity, you will see more mildew.
Right.
If you can keep harvesting, usually it happens late enough in the season that you're sick of zucchini by then, but as a container gardener, you probably will never get sick of zucchini. Maybe, hopefully you will. That means you're producing a lot. So, okay, well, good luck, Nathan.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. John called, wondered about potatoes. He planted potatoes, seed potatoes, in early June, first week of June. Great plants, I guess, but wondering when he can kind of dig them up and eat them.
You know, one of the cool things about potatoes is if we dig them, they're fully mature when the tops die back, okay? And so, you know, my potatoes are looking the same way, nice and green, fully colored, no signs of decline. You could dig them up now and do what they call spring potatoes or young potatoes, and those are the little tiny ones, and you can still eat them. So it's just a matter of what stage of maturity you want them. If you're going to store them, wait for the tops to die back and dig them up then. They'll be full size, better for storing. If you need a few fresh potatoes and, you know, boy, nothing tastes better.
Oh, they're
that's my
so
favorite,
good.
Aren't they? Right from the garden. So you could dig up some. If you have a big patch, you might say, you know what, I'm going to dig up some this week, cook them up for dinner, let some more grow to maturity. So, you know, half your patch may be for early harvest and save the rest for storage or eating when they're full size.
Very, very good. We have Anina on Facebook wondered about her beans. They were struck with white mold after the cool, wet spring. I removed all the affected plants, have left the soil open to sort of fry in the sun. Is it safe to plant another crop there? I was thinking of carrots or parsnips, maybe some radishes.
Yeah, something unrelated. I think it's a sclerotinia, I think, is the fungus that's attacking that. So, yes, I would go to one of the root crops. When we rotate crops, you've got the right idea, Anita, is something unrelated. So you don't want to put peas in there or another legume, but going with a carrot or a radish, that would be a great way to do it. So good idea. Solarizing for things that hit a variety of vegetables is an option if you, you know, to avoid using fungicides or if you don't have room to, you know, rotate your crops because your garden's too small. Kansas State University found that clear plastic over the garden for 6 to 8 weeks in the hottest part of the season. That's most of our garden season, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're really struggling with some soil-borne diseases and you're really, you know, just very frustrated, that might be something to do to take care of that problem for the next season.
Good points, good points. We had a comment on Facebook from Suzanne, and, you know, earlier we were talking about recipes I mentioned online. I mentioned we were talking Epicurious, and she says, for great recipes with photos, go to yummy.com.
Oh.
Yum. So yummy
I'll have
with.
To try that.
Oh, and actually, yum. She says Yumly, Y-U-M-M-L-Y. So there's a L in there. Yumly.com. It compiles recipes from many states. She says every recipe in the world. The most, and she says it's the best way. You can search by ingredient, by diet, by allergy, by nutrition. You can search by taste or by calories or by fat or by price. So there's a lot of different ways.
Oh, excellent.
There's a lot of different ways to search. So that's yumly.com. And you know what? I've never been on that page.
I have not either. And one of the fun things, I joke about not being a cook, but last year I had so much produce. And, you know, after you fix eggplant and your three favorite dishes, you kind of need to come up with other ideas. So I like that you can look by ingredient.
I love that idea as well. I love it. Melinda Myers, our guest today, Milwaukee-based gardening expert and author of more than 20 books on gardening for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller. For this edition of Garden Talk, we've welcomed Melinda Myers, Milwaukee-based garden expert. She is the author of more than 20 books, including Minnesota and Wisconsin Month-by-Month Gardening. She's the host of Melinda's Garden Moments. We have some links to her information on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Always fun to talk with her. She always has a lot of great information to share. And Melinda, thanks for joining us again, by the way. And you're sharing a lot today, as a matter of fact, at the Ball Seed Field Day, are you not?
You bet. Well, actually, I'm taking in a lot of information so that I'll have a lot to share with all of your listeners over the coming year. It's an open house they have for growers and retailers. And then on Sunday, so if anyone's in the West Chicago area or has Sunday open, they're part of the Garden Conservancy Open Days. And if you're familiar with that program, it's private, public gardens and commercial places like this. Ball is the home of the Wave Petunia and Cool Wave Pansy, that they open up their doors for the public. And there's a $7 donation that goes to the Garden Conservancy, not to Ball. But if you've always wanted to see trials of plants, how they pick them, some of the new introductions that will be coming out in 2016, this is a fun place to go. So I'm taking lots of pictures. I was lucky enough to walk through the gardens and see some of the new introductions that we're going to get to see. There's a hydrangea called LA Dream that has pink and blue, both pink and blue flowers.
Oh, my goodness.
I know, and it's big blooms. And I said, well, is it going to be a little more reliable than some of those other repeat bloomers that we've had out in the past? And they feel that it will be, bred in Michigan. So it might be one to look for, that LA Dreams. Campfire Coleus, which has a smoky red, almost in yellow. It's very big and bold and beautiful. And so lots of fun new introductions for us to look forward to, not only as annuals, but they have some cool perennials, sombrero coneflower. And if you've seen sombrero in the past, you're like, you know, some of those new coneflowers, not so good. This red sombrero, mass planting, put in last year, made it through the winter, really looking good, compact, nice red. So I think there's some some solutions and some colors and some performance of plants that we've been looking for. That, you know, there's always so many new plants to try and never enough time and room to grow them all. So
yeah.
This was all about being like, it's like being in a candy store for a gardener. So for any of your listeners in the area, you know, West Chicago, just west of Chicago, the Garden Conservancy open day, and it's from 10 to 4 on Sunday, this Sunday. If you're interested, join it. It's one time that they really have staff on hand to take care of people. There was an article apparently in the Chicago Tribune recently, so all the details would be in there as well.
Wonderful. Well, we have lots of people. Speaking of questions, we have lots of people with questions for you right now, Melinda. And Patty in Eden is one of those people, so let's go to her. Hi, Patty. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. So nice to hear you, Melinda, today.
Thank you so much.
I am looking forward to seeing you at the fair also, because we're going to be
great. Well, excellent. Well, be sure to stop and say hey, because I always love it when your fans, Larry, come up and tell me how much they love you.
So I do a lot of hort questions at the UW Extension office here in Fond du Lac.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. And I love it. I love doing it. And I also do a radio program with KFIZ, a local radio station.
Oh, excellent.
And we had a question about zucchinis, where the plants would start to mature and the end of the zucchini would start to rot. And I told them it was probably blossom end rot.
Right.
Was I correct?
Yes. And, you know, that's and so you've confirmed what I've told the person
right.
with the zucchini and the person with the white pumpkin. So very much so. Sometimes it's moisture-related, and there is a fungal disease that will enter through the flowers as well. So much like tomatoes, it can be a moisture imbalance that can cause that. Or just as that flower fades, and you know the fruit's been pollinated and fertilized, popping that faded flower off sometimes reduces the entryway, kind of closes things up, and sometimes that can help reduce the problem as well.
Is it because of a lack of calcium or just even moisture that doesn't emit the calcium at an even keel in your plant?
So, yeah. So what happens is, for us, we have plenty of calcium in our soils here in Wisconsin, but moist, dry, wet, dry, the plants can't pull up that calcium because they use moisture, you know, as the vessel to take those nutrients, obtain them from the soil, and get them through the plant. So mulching helps with that consistency. You know, we had a lot of rain, and then it's been kind of dry, and, you know, rain can be very spotty and depending on your soil. So big fan of mulching for a lot of reasons, consistent soil moisture, keeping the roots, you know, cool when it gets extremely hot, but also keeping the fruit off the soil. So definitely moisture imbalance. Adding calcium, make sure you need it before you add any calcium. There are a lot of fertilizers that will, you know, people will sell you because you need calcium, but make sure you need it before. Often just adjusting your watering is sufficient.
Around here, we have plenty of calcium as far as I know. So
all of Wisconsin does. So yeah. You're absolutely right. So it's just a moisture. See it more in containers. You know, Nathan, I think, was the caller who had the container plant, just because it's hard to keep that consistent moisture. So good job.
Thanks, Patty. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And here's Nancy in Madison. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I have a question about tomatillos. I have one this year that I got from a small plant. It's about 5 feet tall right now. It's been covered with blossoms for 2 months, and now I have the pods. They can be little. They can be big. There's nothing in them. And the bees are covering the thing.
Hmm.
What is that?
Well, tomatillo is related to, and I know you're all going to go, weather again, related to peppers. I don't think they're sensitive to temperature issues, but failure to fertilize. So it sounds like you have bees, so you've got pollination occurring. But fertilization is that pollen getting to the female part to form the fruit. So a lack of fertilization or, you know, failure for fruit to develop can be moisture imbalance, can be temperature fluctuations. I don't know if you're near the other woman who has a ton of tomatillas, which was too bad. She could share with you.
If they're empty now, they won't fill in probably, huh?
Well, no, you still, I believe have a couple of months of good warm weather.
Yeah.
So I would not write them off. We've still got, at least I feel that our peak garden season, you know, I remember state fairs when, you know, that we're really starting to roll in some of the produce, the warm weather things, the tomatoes and peppers, you know, some people get a jump start. So don't give up on them. I think it's just, you know, that weather was crazy early this season. And, you know, sometimes we have microclimates in our yards that impact our plants differently than even our neighbors. So don't give up on them.
Now,
I just continue proper care.
I'm sorry. It doesn't mean that I need two plants, does it? If their bees are on it, I don't need two plants.
No.
No.
Okay. No, you don't need, one plant's enough.
There you go.
And you know, when you start getting those pods and then you have a lot of seedlings next year, you may wish that you had fewer of them by the end of this season. So I'm thinking you're going to get some yet. So I wouldn't worry too much, Nancy.
No, thanks, Nancy, for calling. Appreciate it. Jeff in Greendale, your turn. Hi, thanks for calling.
You bet. So a couple questions about raspberries. A neighbor wanted to get rid of some raspberries in her backyard, and she gave them to me yesterday. Just two clumps, probably 3 to 4 vines in each clump, maybe 5 feet in length. What's the best way to transplant those at this time of year? That's one question. The second question is, my vines that have bore their fruit and are done, is it too early to cut those out?
Okay.
And the third question is,
okay,
I have raspberries on my south side of my garage and my west side. The ones on the west side are double or triple the size of the ones on the south side. Is that two different varieties, or is it just exposure?
Okay. We're going to start with the last question first. It could be exposure. Growing conditions can impact it, but also varieties. So, and then soil. You know, soil can be huge. I had a small city lot for years, and my soil, even on that small city lot, was variable from one place to the other. So growing conditions are a possibility, could also be varietal. Transplanting, the key to success this time of year is good post-transplant care. So take as much of the root system, or if she's going to give you a big clump, divide the clump. You may be planting a little more thickly than normal, just in case you have some dieback, and then water. Mulch those roots and make sure they get moisture. But only take the plants if they're disease-free, because you don't want someone else's problem. And then pruning. If they are summer-bearing raspberries, so they just finished, you know, when they finish bearing their summer crop, that's when you know you're done getting fruit, then you take those canes back to ground level. And that'll thin things out. You get a better airflow, better light penetration. And then the canes that did not bear fruit this year will have fruit next year. I know you know that, but in case someone's new to growing raspberries. And then do some additional thinning in winter if needed till you have about 5 or 6 canes, well, actually 4 to 5 canes per foot of row. That's a great way to control insect and disease problems with proper pruning.
Just leave those up, correct? The ones that didn't bear fruit, just leave them up throughout.
Oh, exactly. Right. And if you do any pruning, do minimal in late winter after you see what the deer and rabbits have eaten. But only do it if you really have to, because, you know, the fruit bears about 2 feet above the ground to the tip. So the more pruning, the smaller your harvest.
Gotcha. Thank you very much. Have a good weekend.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, too. And Extension has a great publication, Growing Raspberries in Wisconsin, that has a great diagram about how raspberries grow and how to prune them as well. So if you're growing raspberries and intimidated, I have that in my month-by-month book, but get the Extension publication. Great visuals, good information. A step-by-step will guide you through the pruning process.
At learningstore.uwex.edu. There we go. Bart in Fremont, your turn. Hi, Bart.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I sure appreciate the show. My question is in regards to a raised tree bed. I'm trying to grow chestnut trees,
okay.
And I was curious if you had any recommendations on what type of soil I should put in there. They want a well-drained, loose soil, so can I just, like, put leaves and a little bit of a sandier topsoil?
How big is your raised bed, and how high is it?
It's going to be a couple feet off the ground. I'm going to have to fence it in. You know, the varmints definitely love the chestnuts.
And you're talking about the American chestnut, right? Not a horse chestnut, but the American chestnut?
Yes, I am, yep.
Okay. And you're getting them from a good source. I think it's called, there's a couple places, the American chestnut, if you're doing the American chestnut, the edible American chestnut, it's had some problems with chestnut blight, and unfortunately they often get a certain height and about when they're reaching maturity die from this blight. And there were a couple of native stands in Wisconsin that I know the arborist, a few arborists were working on trying to help maintain, and DNR was doing research. There's a company, Chestnut Hill, I think is the company that sells some that are supposed to be disease resistant. Oh. So just, it sounds like you've done your homework. So,
I've been doing some research, but I lucked out and found a beautiful chestnut tree in the area that I harvested some of the nuts from last fall and went through the process of whatever, making them dormant for a while. And I put them in too small of containers, so now they're kind of getting root-bound and slowly dying, but I feel it's too hot to transplant them, like, in the field at this point. So I thought if I made, like, a temporary bed to...
Oh, that's why the raised bed. Oh, I wondered why you were okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say that root system is going to get huge. And nut trees tend to be difficult to transplant. Are you just concerned if you could put them in their permanent location, put a bit of fencing to protect it from the animals, is water an issue that you're worried about being able to water?
No, I mean, I could bring water to them. I just thought, you know, with these... whatever, 90-degree days, being a transplant might not be the best.
If you're going from a container to a in-ground, as opposed to, I'm worried you're going to have to transplant it again because that raised bed's not going to be big enough to hold it when it's mature. It's going to be very stressful if you're going to try to grow it there permanently. I think you'd be better off putting it in its permanent location. If you're growing it in that raised bed permanently, then I would use a mix of compost and topsoil, especially if it drains to the ground below. And anytime you add sand, you end up with the risk of getting concrete. So using compost, some topsoil, if you decide to do that intermediate step or if that's its permanent home. And I'm also worried about 2 feet above ground exposing those roots to extreme cold in winter as well. So if you could get them in the ground and you can keep them watered, mulch the soil, you know, put some protective coat, you know, chicken wire hardware cloth around them to keep the animals away, not only now but over the winter. I think that would be a better way to handle them in the long run.
I think you're absolutely right. Good luck with that, though.
Yes,
Bart.
And all that's so exciting. So the true chestnut's not the horse chestnut that we see a lot, but it's the one that's edible that unfortunately has, you know,
very
suffered.
Hard to.
Yes, chestnut blight.
And thanks again, Andy in Milwaukee. It's your turn. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Larry and Melinda. Thanks for taking my question.
Sure.
I have two Japanese squashes that I planted by seed, so they're not very big, longer than less than 3 feet. And I'm only seeing male flowers. I've seen quite a few, and I even inspected them this morning. And I do see some green, small, you know, buds coming up for the future, and quite a few. I'm just wondering if that's common.
Yeah, great question. I'm so glad you asked. The vine crops, cucumbers, squash, and melons, their first flush of flowers are male. And as you know, the flower, and it's on a straight stem. The female, the next flush of flowers will have male and female, so then you get the pollination fertilization. And the female flower has that immature cucumber, squash, or melon underneath the flower, and that's how you tell without looking inside if it's a male or a female. So fortunately, it's just a matter of waiting. There's nothing you can do to speed up the process, but know that those female flowers will be coming soon. You'll get pollination and then lots of squash.
There we
go. Okay, well, thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate the call. And you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. On Facebook, actually on email, John emailed us and asked about whether or not you could discuss best practices for a fallow garden that's been in production for 15-plus years. Next year, it will not be used, but maybe the following year. If it's not planted, it'll fill with weeds. What are some low-maintenance ideas for an idle field while preferably also improving it?
Great question. And one of the good, exciting things is green manure cropping was very popular years and years and decades ago, and has really regained popularity recently. I think as more people want to go organic, as more people are trying to work the soil so that you have a good foundation for your plants. And I'm even finding green manure crop combinations available at garden centers, and some may contain, buckwheat is a great seed source, and it used to be, unless you lived near, you know, farm co-op, it was hard to find. There are some mixes that have peas in them. So those are nitrogen fixers that will take the nitrogen from the atmosphere and put it in the ground. So what I would suggest you do, and you can order these online through catalogs or at a garden center, or if you live near a farm co-op, I took a hillside that we did some changing, some regrading, and I wasn't ready to plant it, and we put in winter wheat and planted that, and so that helped keep the weeds down, and so that's a great way. And then you can till those green manure crops in at the end of the season or right before planting, and then that adds organic matter to the soil. So you're doing exactly what you want. You're keeping the weeds down because you've got the desired plant competing. You're improving the soil when you till it under. If you don't get that done, best intentions, limited time, mulching, even just putting shredded leaves on the soil surface or evergreen needles, whatever organic material you have so that you can help suppress the weeds, then tilling that into the garden in the, I like to do a fall incorporation, then by spring it's broken down, ready to plant. And so mulching your garden, even though you don't have plants, will help reduce the weed issues as well. So two different ways to manage that.
Yeah, very good points. Barb in Verona has a question. Hi, Barb.
Oh, hi. I had a question. I really fell in love with this tree. It's called, I believe it's a Wells Hinoki False Cypress.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm in Verona, and what I would like to do is to plant it it will have exposure to all sun, but I wanted to plant it it's in a rock wall. So it's a double rock wall. The first layer has a couple of boulders, so it's about 3 feet high. And then there's another layer that's probably about a foot or two high with another layer of boulders. And I wondered if having those boulders there, if that would cause a problem with the root system, whether it would, you know, grow well there, and yeah, or would it bust down my rock wall somehow? And
yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know if I'm picturing it. So is it like a retaining wall where you have 3 feet high, then you have some soil, and then behind it a foot of raising with boulders,
correct,
and then more soil?
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. And so will it be in the first one or the second one behind it? In the first, like the 3 feet up area, or behind the next, is it on the next step up?
I was looking at the first layer.
Okay, and so you say it gets full sun. What about winter winds? That's what really is hard on the false cypress.
Okay.
The winter winds and the cold winter temperatures, they're kind of, during the winter, not this past one, the year before, I saw some dieback on some of the false cypress, but most have recovered. Exposed sites are what's a problem. Not so much the full sun as the winter winds. And the winter sun can be a problem, too. So if it's south-facing, it tends to dry out a little more. So if it's very exposed to winter wind and winter sun, make sure it's watered well, make sure it's mulched, you know, before the ground freezes. And you might want to start with a smaller investment. I know that means you're waiting, but at least, you know, then you can kind of monitor it. And if it doesn't do well in that spot, you could still move it, too. You know, sometimes
that's better.
It does. You know, a friend of mine has one in a very exposed place. She had some damage the winter of 2013-14, and it's recovered. And, you know, she knows it's thinner, but anybody else looking at that plant would still be amazed at how beautiful that plant is. So winter winds, the tough part.
Always a pleasure, Melinda. Thank you so much for joining us, and I'll look forward to seeing you at State Fair.
Sounds good. Thanks, Larry, and everyone have a great gardening day. Bye.
Bye-bye. Melinda Myers, our guest, our Milwaukee-based garden guru. Thanks to her, and thanks to you for listening. We have lots more in store. You stay tuned here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. For Garden Talk, I'm Larry Mueller.